This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy.
Let's be honest. Loving your partner doesn't mean you always like them, and guess what? That's normal.
Regain, powered by BetterHelp, offers couples therapy that's flexible, affordable, and 100% online.
Whether you're reconnecting or working through conflict, Regain is here to support you both.
See why people wish they'd tried couples therapy sooner. Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. That's regain.com/couplespod.
Looking to buy your dream home or rent that perfect apartment? With the Redfin app, you'll know the moment your next place hits the market. Set up your gotta-have-it wish list, and Redfin will send you real-time notifications for properties that match. And when you're ready to see it in person, scheduling a tour is just a tap away. Thinking about selling? Redfin can do that too. In fact, Redfin agents close twice as many deals as other agents, so they know how to get the best price for your home. And with a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin charges half of what others often charge. So you could save big, like really big. Last year, Redfin saved home sellers $118 million. So whether you're buying, renting, or selling, Redfin's ready to help you win. Download the Redfin app and start searching today.
What's the scariest you've ever seen? Story one, I was sitting in my room watching TV, typical 9-year-old stuff. All of a sudden, I heard moaning and faint cries for help. I didn't quite understand where it was coming from, since it was so unfamiliar to me. At first, I thought it was my brother playing Perfect Dark, because my dad always joked to friends that people would scream in that game, much to my brother's annoyance. I wanted to see this in action, so I ran into my brother's room, all excited, only to find he wasn't there. I still heard it, though, and still couldn't grasp what was going on. I followed the sounds through the house and stopped at the door to the garage. Right then, my gut twisted as I realized what was happening and what would be on the other side of the door. I opened the door to find my mom on the ground with a puddle of blood around her head. She had been in the attic moving stuff around, tripped, and fell through an uncovered section to the garage floor 12 feet below. I walked up to her and couldn't say anything. She just let out, "Get Dad." And once it clicked, I ran downstairs to find my dad watching a movie with my brother at full volume. I told my dad, "Mom's hurt," and he responded, "What? What do you want?" I yelled, "Mom's hurt, garage," and my dad's eyes widened as he sprinted upstairs. I had never seen him run that fast before. She ended up being all right, just a broken collarbone and a concussion. The experience itself was scary, but the thought that I may have saved her life is even scarier. My mom told me afterward that when I found her, she was just about to lose consciousness. Had I not found her when I did, she would have passed out and not been able to call for help. My dad and brother couldn't hear her over the movie, so it would have been at least 2 hours before anyone found her. Now, it's just one of those memories I randomly recall and think, oh yeah, that really did happen. But every once in a while, the memory makes my heart skip a beat. Story two, I was at a friend's house spending the night. He lives in an upper-class neighborhood, million-dollar homes, lots of land, houses are spread out. A few of us were watching a movie in his theater room when we heard someone walking around upstairs. We found it strange because it was 3 in the morning, so we went upstairs to check things out. At first, we thought it might have been one of my friend's parents, but when we went upstairs, all the lights were still off and nobody seemed to be there. Keep in mind, he has a big house, so it took a few minutes to check all the rooms and dark corners and make sure all the doors were locked. Then we went back downstairs. About a minute after we got into the basement, we heard footsteps upstairs again, and we all thought somebody was messing with us. We crept back upstairs silently this time, and when we saw my friend's front door wide open, we all nearly lost it. His parents had been asleep the entire time, and because all the doors were locked before we went downstairs, that means somebody was in the house when we checked the first time. Story three. I was stationed in Iraq at the time, at an Air Force base called LSA Anaconda. To get to the mess hall, you had to cross this rock field about the size of a football field with no cover. We were heading to eat one day when the incoming siren went off. Not the "a mortar is going to hit on the base" kind, but rather the "you better get cover immediately because this one is hitting within 1 kilometer of where you're standing." So my buddy and I bolted toward the nearest bunker,
a big concrete slab where you could take cover. And just as we got to it, boom, a head and ear rattling explosion ripped through the air right in front of us. I hit the ground and knew I had been hit. It was just too close. I managed to stand up, still shaky, and there were pieces of rock in my hat. We didn't have to wear helmets while on post. When my vision cleared, I saw my buddy grabbing his throat and gasping for air. A piece of shrapnel had hit him right in the neck. From this point on, it was a blur. We got the medics over as soon as possible after trying to stop the bleeding, and they were able to get him across the base to the hospital. He lived. It missed his jugular by just 2 to 3 millimeters. For me, it was one thing to be outside the wire, where you were tensed up and always half expecting an IED to go off or a sniper to take a shot at you. But being on a relatively safe for Iraq base and having that piece ripped away like that, it was something else entirely. Story 4. This is a brief account of something I experienced almost a year ago in the warehouse where I work alone. No one I've told has believed me, but maybe you will. I work in a warehouse that my father purchased. He bought it for 25% of its cost from a farmer who seemed very eager to be rid of it. It's located in the middle of Mennonite country with no neighbors for half a mile. Look out the window. You see cornfields and scraggly trees. Cell service? Forget it. I work there alone, painting and preparing the front office for future use. To get there, you must go through a hallway from the main warehouse into a secondary office and then through another door into the front. I frequently hear bumps and thuds and occasionally feel air movement in the warehouse. But I've always assumed it's from drafts or animals in the roof. The only thing that ever truly made me uneasy was that all the door locks are reversed. Whoever installed them didn't want to keep people out. They wanted to keep something in. It didn't get too unsettling until one day when I was in the front office and began to hear thudding again. I ignored it and kept applying masking tape to the door I was working on. But this time, it was accompanied by a screeching sound. Not loud, but definitely there. I tried to convince myself it was just a raccoon or squirrel that got inside. I kept working until I heard a slam. The door to the secondary office had been open, and it sounded like it had violently closed. I peeked around the corner and saw I was right. The secondary door was now shut. I tried to explain it away, thinking maybe a strong draft closed it, even though I knew that was unlikely. The thudding returned, this time close, very close. It now sounded like it was right on the other side of the door. I froze, my eyes locked on the door handle as it began to turn. The latch disengaged and the door slowly swung open. Wider, wider, and nothing. Nothing visible, no movement of air, just silence. A silence so dense it felt suffocating. Then the screech came again, clearly human this time, full of pain and anger, coming from the main warehouse. The door slammed shut. That finally broke me from my frozen state. I ran. I got into my car and drove until I had signal to call my dad. He didn't believe anything about the doors, but agreed the building had a strange feel. He said he'd meet me there. Half an hour later, we drove back together. I showed him the door that slammed, explaining how it couldn't have been closed by a draft. I told him about the sounds and the sudden silence. He suggested we check the main warehouse. I felt braver with him there, so I led the way. A bit of background. The warehouse used to be a furniture factory owned by a Mennonite farmer. They made handmade tables, chairs, and such. The floor was covered in thick dust from the woodwork. We entered the warehouse and saw nothing unusual. The dust was undisturbed, the windows locked, but one of the fluorescent light fixtures hanging from the ceiling was askew and swaying slightly. My dad grabbed a stepladder to check the mount. He held it while I climbed up to steady the light. That's when I saw it. On top of the light was a handprint. Fresh, inhumanly large. No footprints in the dust. No indication anyone had been up there. I climbed down and switched places with my dad. He looked and said, "What the heck? There's been no one in here for years." He mentioned thinking someone was breaking into steel parts, but I told him this wasn't human. Then, as if to prove it, the thud returned. This time it felt like an earthquake. The entire building shifted. The deep, pounding thud was followed by the screech, so loud it seemed to come from the walls themselves. We ran. I haven't gone back. My dad hired someone else to finish the work and has since moved into the office. He's heard the thudding, but nothing more has happened. What was it? I don't know. I don't care to know. But something is in that building, and the man who sold it to us knew. I'll never forget the sound of that lock turning or the suffocating silence that followed. Story 5. When I was about 13, I was staying at my friend's house. His father had just passed away from a stroke, so I was there for support. That afternoon, we were playing in his dad's garage, his radio room. His dad had been a very active ham radio operator and had all kinds of scanners, radios, and strange equipment. The one I remembered best was the big one. I don't recall the brand, but it was about 3 times the size of a VCR. I remembered how his dad would show us how he could talk to people all over the world with it. We were never allowed to touch it, not even speak into it. That day, we turned it on and started twisting the channel knob, just listening until we heard a voice come through. I remember hearing shouting preachers, thumping their Bibles, doing their usual thing. There was even a guy from Canada who told us to get off the radio because we weren't licensed. For some reason, I thought he could track us, so we quickly turned it off and ran inside to play video games. Later that night, we got bored and snuck back into the garage to see what else we could hear. Same kind of content, more preachers, more static, even a drunk guy who cursed at us. At one point, we came across a number station that creeped us out, but we kept turning the dial anyway. I remember seeing on the LED display that we were somewhere in the 3.8 megahertz.
Lowe's knows laundry day should be easy. Achieve maximum versatility with a dryer door that swings open either way, making load transfer from washer to dryer a breeze. Plus, with LG ThinQ, save time by controlling your washer remotely. Shop LG, America's most reliable line of home appliances, today at Lowe's. Based on independent reliability surveys 2021 to 2024 and select major appliances as compared to competing manufacturers offering full appliance lines. See associate for more details. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. Exclusions apply. Valid 6/18 through 7/9.
It's range. My friends started making fart noises over the mic, like the immature kids we were, laughing. And then suddenly a voice came through. The best way I can describe it, it sounded like James Earl Jones mixed with that eerie voice from the Mothman movie with Richard Gere. He laughed and said, and I remember this exactly, "Caleb and Tex Surfer, y'all cut it out, you crazy kids. I'm trying to enjoy my vacation on the moon." He knew our names. We had no idea how. We had never heard that voice before. Then he started talking about things only we could know, stuff no one else knew. He mentioned my mom's car overheating, which hadn't even been taken to the shop yet. Caleb asked how he knew, and the guy just laughed. Caleb tested him and asked what the home phone number was. The man got it right. We were terrified. Then he started going on and on about bizarre things. At one point, he ranted about how much he hated ketchup, said it again and again. Then he told my friend he was on the dark side of the moon. Repeated it like 20 times. He said he could make radio waves do weird things. And then, out of nowhere, a scanner turned on and blasted a loud, high-pitched tone through the speaker. We freaked out and ran to get his mom. She came out to the radio shack, and suddenly the man said, in a really angry voice, "You think Susan can save you?" She had no idea who it was, but he got her name right. She was shocked and kept asking if we were playing some trick. Then the voice said something that hit her deeply. "Susan, your mother wasn't the best cook, I'll tell you. These cookies suck. Good thing no one here has to eat them." Her mother had died when she was just 7. Susan freaked out and told us to go inside. She stayed in the shack for about 30 minutes. When she came back, she was pale as a ghost, crying, visibly shaken. To this day, she refuses to tell us what the man said to her. She freaks out every time we even mention it. After that, the radio and all the equipment were packed up. Never powered on again. The antennas were removed. I still don't know what happened that night, but it's the most frightened I've ever been. All 3 of us ended up staying at my mom's house. Susan and Caleb stayed for the entire week. My mom's kind of on the fence about the whole thing, but she agrees something happened. We just don't know what the man said to Caleb's mom, but whatever it was, it still haunts her. Story 6. Not seen, but heard, I grew up in a small rural town in the mountains. One night, when I was about 16 or 17, a couple of friends and I drove to another guy's house. There wasn't any space to park in front, so we had to leave the car up a dirt road and walk about a quarter mile to get there. It was late, around midnight, pitch black. The only sound was our footsteps and our voices. Then suddenly, my friend stopped and whispered, "Shh." We all froze and listened. That's when we heard it, screaming. It sounded like a woman or a child. high-pitched, blood-curdling. It was coming from up on the mountainside. There were no houses up there. It was far enough away that it sounded faint, but close enough that if it had been daylight, we probably could have seen where it was coming from. We just stood there, frozen on a narrow dirt road. No lights, nowhere to run, just silence. And that scream again and again. We stood there for at least 2 minutes before it stopped. Just like that. Nothing. We took off running, made it to our friend's house breathless. We told him what happened, but we didn't call the police. We had weed on us and didn't want to risk it. Eventually, we just convinced ourselves that someone was messing with us. Probably just a prank, but deep down, we knew that wasn't it. It was the scariest thing I've ever experienced. And even now, 15 years later, I still think about it. Story 7. I was 4 years old. I remember my parents yelling, again. My father was viciously abusive to my mother, so watching him beat her had become normal. They were young. Mama was 24, with four kids between 8 and 4. He was 27, father to all of us. Anyway, Mama always tried to protect herself. I walked into the kitchen when I noticed the yelling had stopped, but instead of the familiar sound of hits and slaps, I heard strange, heavy thuds. Our kitchen and living room were one open space, so we could see everything. My oldest brother, who was 8, ran in behind me. My other two brothers followed. They were 6 and 5. We all saw the same thing. My mother on the ground. She was conscious, but her spirit was broken. She wasn't trying to fight back. My father was kicking her in the midsection, over and over. Then he picked up a kitchen knife and started toward her, screaming awful things. His face was terrifying. I froze, but my brothers didn't. They jumped on him, attacking with everything they had. Their little fists, their feet, even their teeth. My father, furious, grabbed my oldest brother and threw him across the room. He hit the couch hard, but he got right back up. He saw me trying to help, shoved me down and yelled, "No! Stay down! You're too small!" He ran back into the fight. And then something happened. My mother, seeing her boys being hurt, something lit up inside her. Her strength came rushing back. And for the first time ever, she hit my father. She snapped. She fought him off. My brothers came back to me. They picked me up and ran with me into the bedroom. We huddled together, eyes shut, praying he wouldn't kill her. He didn't. She left soon after, but not before one more moment I'll never forget. We were in the back seat of the car. She was trying to leave him. We saw her, our mother, with a gun in her mouth. The police had to step in to get us out. That memory still makes me cry. If it hadn't been for my brothers, she probably wouldn't be here. Story 8. About 25 years ago, I was driving to work as an Applebee's waitress, heading down a 4-lane highway. I looked to my left because something caught my eye. What I saw was a yellow dog flying through the air, heading into oncoming traffic. My brain couldn't even process what I was seeing. But a split second later, in my peripheral vision, I saw a yellow truck come into view in the left lane. The driver, a white man with blonde hair, had his hands on the steering wheel. His head was tilted back, and his neck was forced awkwardly forward. He was convulsing violently, and blood was spraying straight out of his neck with so much force, it covered the entire driver's side window. I was shaking so badly, but the Applebee's was at the next exit, so I pulled off. I ran inside and sat down in the manager's office, telling him I needed a minute before I started my shift. My manager thought I was making it up when I told him what had just happened. But then, several of my coworkers showed up half an hour late, those who drove the same direction I had, and they said there was an accident on the highway. That's when it hit me. The accident had happened right beside me in real time. I realized the dog I saw flying must have been in the back of that yellow truck. The man, bleeding out next to me, must have been dying as I drove past. I have no idea what exactly happened. I didn't hear an impact. No collision sounds, nothing. Story 9. I was on my way to visit my dad with one of his colleagues while he was working on his M.PHIL. Our route took us through a place called Lama. Even today, there are signs that read "Danger, wild elephants," and police patrols show up every few miles. This was about 10 years ago. There wasn't much civilization there, just the highway and a few scattered indigenous villages. We were in a drop-top Jeep driving up the hilly road when we noticed some kind of commotion by the side.
Violence wasn't uncommon there, so our driver pulled over a little ahead and walked back to see what was happening. 2 minutes later, he came running back, face pale, panicked. He asked if we had any kind of weapon on us, a knife, a stick, anything. The noise behind us was getting louder, and a crowd was forming. I stepped out and walked closer, and I just stood there, frozen. There were maybe 20 people on two ends of what looked like a massive snake. I think it was a python, though maybe my memory makes it seem larger. People were trying to unravel it while hacking at it with sticks and stones. The snake was thrashing, trying to coil in tighter. And that's when I realized. I felt lightheaded. The snake's jaws were stretched impossibly wide, and there were two small legs sticking out of its mouth. I think they were still twitching, alive. People shouted, cried, and asked if the child could be saved. Could they cut them out in time? The screams around us grew louder, and every few seconds there was this awful, wet screeching sound as more of the child was pulled into the snake. We stayed until villagers arrived with machete-like blades. They started hacking at the snake, trying to get to the child. But deep down, we all knew it was too late. We just needed to get far away. I threw up twice on the way. We were both shaking. That night, I barely slept. Storytime. I was standing next to my car at a gas station, pumping gas, when I saw a girl walking along the side of the road across from me. She was kind of cute, so I watched her for a second. That's when a car pulled up beside her. It slowly followed her for a moment, and then three big guys jumped out and grabbed her. She started screaming, trying to fight them off, but they overpowered her and shoved her into the back seat. The car then pulled behind a closed-for-the-night auto shop, right where they'd grabbed her. From where I was standing, I could still see the car. And even across the road, I could hear her screaming. The car rocked violently as she fought from inside. The moment I realized what was happening, I called 911. I gave them a full play-by-play, descriptions, plate numbers, everything I could. After a couple of minutes, the car pulled back out and sped off down the road. She was still screaming in the back. They must have been doing 90 miles an hour. It really messed me up to witness something like that. Right then and there, I made a promise to myself. I would never stand idly by while something like that happened again. Now I carry a handgun. I've been trained to use it. I pray I never have to, but if I need to, I will. I'll never just stand by and let someone get hurt like that again. Story 11. I lived about 2 miles outside of town on an oil sand road and worked at a McDonald's in town. When the weather was nice, I'd walk to work. This was one of those days. I was strolling along when I heard a car engine behind me, screaming like it was maxed out. I looked around and found a good spot to step off the road. The car got about 100 yards from me, right near a dangerous turn I just passed. That turn was improperly banked, deceptively tricky. The car was flying. It hit the turn, and the back end swung out. They fishtailed, overcorrected, and the car rolled, coming straight toward me. As it flipped, glass and chunks of pavement hit me in the face and neck. The car landed in the ditch, just 6 feet away from me, right side up. I ran over to see if anyone was hurt. When I opened the back door, a bunch of exploding beer cans came tumbling out, followed by a very drunk guy. There were two more inside, also drunk, and the driver was slumped over with a nasty cut on his forehead. All three were fine, just minor injuries. All three were arrested for DUI. And me? I was late for work. But honestly, compared to how late I could have been, I'll take it. Story 12. Before I knew what sleep paralysis was, I was just drifting off to sleep, right on the edge between consciousness and being out, when I saw the door to my room crack open, just slightly, and I could sense something come in, an evil spirit. It was invisible, but I felt it. As it moved toward my bed, I wanted to scream, to jump up, anything, but my entire body was frozen. My eyes were open, but I couldn't move. I couldn't even make the tiniest sound. Internally, I was fighting, begging my body to get up, right now. But nothing worked, and that malevolent spirit kept coming closer, slowly. Just as it got beside me, just as it was about to do something, I finally broke through. My arms shot up to protect myself, and I let out this tiny whimper because my throat was almost shut from the stress. And then, just like that, it vanished. The room felt normal again. I looked at the clock. I had only been asleep for 15 minutes, and strangely, I felt calm. Despite everything that had just happened, I rolled over and fell back asleep. I remembered it all, clear as day. The next morning, it happened one more time after that, and that's when I finally learned about sleep paralysis. Turns out this happens to people all the time. Still, that was the most afraid I've ever been. Even though it only lasted a few seconds, it felt like hours. Story 13. Right out of the academy, within the first few weeks, I ended up chasing a shooting suspect through a rough neighborhood. We were following leads and ended up cutting through a backyard where he'd last been seen. I hopped a fence and found myself in an alley full of needles, trash, feces, you name it. Gun drawn, tack light on, I started moving through the alley. I found a door leading into the basement of a public housing building. It opened just a crack, chained from the inside. As soon as I pulled it open, this massive pit bull launched at the gap, barking like crazy. It scared the life out of me. For a second, I couldn't breathe. I remember thinking, the way that alley looked, it reminded me of something out of a Resident Evil game. It was one of the scariest moments of my life. At any second, that guy could have popped out and lit me up. And the dog? That was just the cherry on top. Honestly, I'm surprised I didn't have brown stains in my boxers. Eventually, they found the suspect hiding under a car down the street. And I learned an important lesson that night. Never go anywhere alone. Always tell your partner where you're headed. Other than that, sometimes the hardest part of law enforcement is the dead you do encounter. Some of them hit you emotionally, and they make you go home and hug your family a little tighter. Story 14. Back in June of 2007, I lived in a trailer park. And if you've ever been in one, you know, they're usually way too close together. The area I was in wasn't the best. Lots of drugs, violence, bad stuff. One of my neighbors, before I moved in, was almost beaten to death with a hammer over a giant ball of crack. So hearing gunshots, not unusual. We were used to it. Most of the time, we didn't even call the police anymore. No one did. So one night we heard a very loud shot, but again, we didn't report it. Just figured it was more of the same. Fast forward a week, and the trailer park started to smell off, which, to be fair, wasn't strange. The whole town had a bad smell, and the park wasn't exactly clean. Two more weeks went by. That's when we realized we hadn't seen or heard our neighbor in a long time. The last time we heard him was the night of the shot. His music had been blaring, but we didn't put it together at first, and the smell kept getting worse. It was like a mix of rotting garbage, dead fish, and sour body odor. By what would have been the start of the fourth week, I was convinced he'd just gone on vacation and left some gross fish or meat on his porch. He fished a lot. I walked up to his place and saw the curtain slightly open, but it was too dark inside, and I didn't have a flashlight. I leaned toward the porch, but his trash can wasn't even there like usual. That gave me a weird feeling, so I backed away and left with my friend to enjoy the day. Something in my gut didn't feel right. A few hours later, I got a call from another friend, someone who lived on the other side of that trailer. They said they called the cops because of the smell, and sure enough, the neighbor had been dead in his trailer. That was him we'd been smelling. It was mid-June, hot, his trailer had been locked up. No wonder the smell was so unbearable. I'd been feeling sick for days, no appetite. Never once thought it was from inhaling those toxic fumes. We ran outside when we heard the police were there. The front door had been kicked in. Thousands of flies lined the frame. The smell was unbearable. We stayed outside trying to piece it all together. We realized exactly when he must have died. We even told one of the officers. And that's when I saw my ex staring at something behind me. His face froze. I turned around, slowly, and saw the body. They had it on a stretcher in a black body bag, which was partly unzipped. I swear my mind tried to protect me from what I saw. It looked like the face was completely smooth. No eyes, no mouth, no features. At first, I stupidly thought, why did they wrap him in black plastic? It took a moment to realize he was decomposed. The man had been white, but the heat had turned his body black. You could even see where the bullet had exited the trailer, right through the front. If I had used a flashlight to look in that night, I might have seen him. It was the scariest thing I'd ever experienced. It messed me up for a long time. I couldn't sleep without pills. I couldn't stay home alone without panic attacks. If we came home late, I had to be sandwiched between two people with guns just to walk inside. And my ex? He didn't care. He refused to move because the rent was cheap. Didn't bother him one bit that someone was murdered right next door, or that the trailer on the other side was abandoned and still stained with blood from another attack. I was on the edge of losing my mind, but somehow I pulled through. Eventually, I got out. Got rid of him, too. He still lives there. Good luck to him. Story 15. You know those generic jack-o'-lantern trick-or-treat baskets you can buy around Halloween? Back when I was a kid, my mom wanted to use those to cover the outdoor lights leading up to our front door. If you cut out the bottom, they fit perfectly around the bulbs. So the next day, my dad went out and bought a bunch. He grabbed a big old knife and started cutting out the bottoms. My sister and I were standing in the living room, watching him while he talked to us. And then it happened. He went to cut one of the pumpkins and must have used too much pressure. The plastic buckled and splintered down one side. The knife slipped straight through and sliced open his hand, from the web of his thumb all the way down to his wrist. Blood started pouring, dark red, thick, and my dad didn't even notice it at first. When my sister and I screamed, he just looked at us, totally confused, and said, "What?" Like we were overreacting. Then he looked down, saw his hand, and immediately jumped up yelling, "Debbie, Debbie, come quick!" My mom ran in, saw him dripping blood, and she just lost it. I followed them into the kitchen, panicking, convinced my wonderful dad was going to die. He passed out from the blood loss while my mom tried to hold him up. She shouted at my sister and me to go get the neighborhood. Thankfully, we lived in a tight-knit community. My dad's friend, who was an army medic, and about five other adults were already outside chatting two doors down. They rushed over and took charge. They handled the bleeding and sent my sister and me to stay at a neighbor's house. Working midnights now, I doubt anyone will read this far down a thread, but that memory still gets to me. Since then, I've learned how to stay calm and professional in traumatic moments, even when someone I love is the one bleeding. Story 16. I had just graduated college and landed my first job, seasonal work. I arrived at the site, got assigned my living quarters, and was excited for my first day. After settling in, I set my alarm for 6:50 a.m., got comfortable, and dozed off. Around 6:30, I was awakened by the sound of rustling leaves and breaking twigs outside my tent. I figured people were getting up and making breakfast. I stayed in my sleeping bag for a moment, soaking in the warmth, trying to build the motivation to get out into the cold Alaskan air. That's when my 8x10 wall tent shifted. I froze, waited, told myself I imagined it. Then I sat up on my cot, positioned along the right wall of the tent, and stretched. And suddenly something appeared. It was like a scene from a horror movie. The side wall of my tent bulged inward, like rubber, with the distinct outline of a massive set of nostrils. The bulge stopped inches from my shoulder, and a huge cloud of hot air blasted through the fabric, followed by two loud sniffs. I froze solid, trembling in fear. A bear. A massive bear. Not just near my tent, it was on it, and it could smell me. After sniffing for a few seconds, it placed its front paws on the top of the tent and started shaking and clawing, gently, but enough to test the structure. I thought I was going to die. Terrified, helpless, I yelled, "Get out!" in the lowest, loudest tone I could manage. That startled the camp dog, who immediately began barking, and the bear took off. I kept yelling, "Bear!" until my campmates showed up with guns. That was night one of 120 days in camp, and the beginning of a long bear saga. Story 17. This happened during a night of drinking. A girl and I were standing on a balcony, smoking a cigarette. My place was on a hill, so across the street was just a steep slope, a sidewalk, and a single streetlight. We were fooling around, talking, and just enjoying the moment when we both looked over and saw someone standing directly under the streetlight, not moving, just staring in our direction. It was far enough away that we couldn't see details, but close enough to feel watched. It was deep in a quiet neighborhood. No one was ever out walking that late. The only noise was our own voices. We laughed it off at first, figured it was someone walking who happened to stop. But when we looked again a few moments later, the person was still there, unmoving, staring. My stomach dropped. The longer we looked, the worse the feeling got, that creeping, anxious feeling. We backed away from the light of the balcony and hid inside for a few minutes. When we returned, the person was gone. I searched up and down the street. There were no parked cars, no shadows, no movement, just emptiness. I'm not saying it was a ghost, but to this day, I don't know what it was. Easily the creepiest moment of my life. Story 18. 2 years ago, I was driving to a friend's place to drop off my Where's Waldo costume. He wanted to wear it at school the next day. I had been putting it off for over a week, so I finally decided to do it. It was about 6:15 p.m. We live in a pretty rural area, and his house is surrounded by woods. I wasn't worried. I'd had my license for over 6 months. No accidents, no tickets. Just a little rain, not enough to be concerned. About 3/4 of the way there, the road takes a sharp turn to the left and drops, kind of like a corkscrew. It narrows a lot. On the right is a 10-meter drop. On the left, a solid stone wall. As I made the turn, I saw a man running, back toward me, down the road. I couldn't see much in front of me because of the curves. And then, just ahead, a car stopped in the middle of the road. No room to pass. Nowhere to go. I slammed on my brakes. But with the rain, I started to skid, straight toward the man. It happened so fast. He hit my windshield hard, flipped over the top of my car. It all took maybe 5 seconds. I jumped out in shock, looked around. But he was gone. He'd gone over the edge. The driver of the stopped car was having a mild panic attack, muttering, "Steve, Steve." I ran down the hill to look for him, yelling at her to call 911. After 5 minutes, I found him, pale, cold, barely responsive. I kept yelling, and eventually he moaned. I was 16, still not sure how I did it, but I carried him up the slope, back to the road. His shirt was torn to shreds. I gave him my jacket. That image still haunts me. As I helped him sit up, I saw his back. 2 deep cuts. And beneath them, I could see nearly every vital organ in his body. I quickly covered him and waited for the paramedics. The authorities showed up, questioned me, and my dad drove me home. I didn't sleep that night. For weeks after, I'd wake up crying, randomly, in the middle of the night. I didn't drive that road again for over a year, and honestly, I still avoid it when I can. Story 19. I was walking my dog around the neighborhood. About 2 blocks away, I came upon a house with a long gravel driveway. I didn't know the people who lived there. I noticed a car parked in a strange position, like the front tire was flat. Then I saw what I thought was a rolled-up rug or tarp under the front tire. As I got closer, I realized it was a man. He was pinned underneath the car he'd been working on. The jack had failed, and there was no backup support under the car. I ran to him, dropped my dog's leash, and started screaming for help. I was trying to lift the car, but he wasn't responsive. His wife came outside in a bathrobe, and I shouted at her to call 911. My dog, riled up from my yelling, started barking at the man on the ground. Within minutes, other neighbors rushed over. Together, we managed to lift the car, but it was too late. The man had died. It was awful. I never walk past that house anymore. And every time I see his wife drive through the neighborhood, I feel this overwhelming guilt, like somehow I failed her. Story 20. I work in New Mexico flying aircraft for part of the year. During the assignment, there are usually 3 pilots stationed there. One of the pilots woke up one day with flu-like symptoms and blood in his urine. Over the next day or two, things got worse. Eventually, the other pilot took him to a local doctor. This was in a town with fewer than 1,500 people. I was at the base when I got a frantic call. Prepare the aircraft immediately. We had to medevac him to the nearest larger city. During the entire flight, I kept looking back at him. He was barely awake. It was decided that he needed to get to a proper emergency facility, and fast. His parents were told to catch the next flight. He was bleeding internally, and no one could figure out how to stop it. Not even 30 minutes after we landed, he was rushed into surgery. His spleen had ruptured and dumped 3 liters of blood into his abdomen. It was a close call. He made it. Emergency surgery saved his life. If we hadn't acted quickly, if he had stayed in that small town, he would have died. No question. Later, he was diagnosed with a rare blood disorder that only a tiny percentage of people worldwide have ever been diagnosed with. Thinking back on it still gives me chills. Story 21. I was driving around with some friends one night, around midnight, and I really had to use the bathroom. I pulled over at the start of a bike path just off the main road and ran into the woods. There was a small shelter with a covered bench that looked perfect. As I ran over, I started unzipping my pants, just trying to speed things up. I'm a girl, so I was getting ready to squat behind the bench. It was pitch black, and I couldn't see a thing. Then suddenly, I saw a pair of eyes, and I heard a groan. There in the shelter was a homeless man I had just woken up. But at that moment, to me, he was clearly a murderer. I screamed like I've never screamed before, took off running. I hurdled a 3-foot fence like it was nothing and dove into the car. My pants were still halfway down. It was the scariest moment of my life. Story 22. I volunteered as an EMT in a small village just outside New York City. I started in high school and continued through college. One night, we were on call not just for our town, but also for 2 nearby villages, both of which were out of service. One of those villages isn't the safest area. Normally, police meet us on every scene. But that night, there was a fire in town and a crime investigation elsewhere, so police were stretched thin. We got a call for a 25-year-old male with a facial wound located in the backyard of a private residence. No police were available, no advanced life support, just me and my driver. We arrived at an apartment building with an open yard out back. My driver pulled onto the field and spotted the patient, sitting in the shadows like he was hiding. Something felt off. I got this awful feeling, so I hit the floodlights on the ambulance. The second the lights turned on, we saw them, 5 to 7 men standing in the dark, holding tire irons and baseball bats. My driver hit reverse, and we got the hell out of there. I immediately called for backup. Later, we found out the plan was to jump us, steal narcotics, and take the ambulance for a joyride. The joke's on them. We didn't even carry narcotics on our basic life support rig. To this day, I still wonder what would have happened if we had walked into that yard in the dark. Story 23. When I was a freshman in high school, I spent the day at my grandma's house. At one point, I went outside to get the mail. When I came back in, she was sitting in her chair, moving her right arm in slow circular motions. I asked her what she was doing, and she tried to speak, but nothing came out, just garbled sounds. Suddenly, her entire body started to convulse. She was having a seizure. I froze. I was the only one home. I cried, unsure of what was happening or what to do. I called my mom and begged her to come quickly. About 5 long minutes later, my grandma went limp. I thought she had died right in front of me. But then, she sat up, looked at me, and told me she thought she had just had a stroke. Shortly after, my mom arrived and paramedics were called. It was the most terrifying thing I've ever witnessed. I truly thought I was losing my grandma in that moment. Later, we found out the cancer had spread to her brain, and that was what caused the seizure. Story 24. A friend and I were walking across town to get back to my house. It was the middle of the night, in the middle of winter, snowy, cold, during our 10th grade year. There was only one person in sight across the street. As we walked, easily for 20 minutes, turning onto different streets, we noticed he was still there, still on the other side, still about 100 feet back. That's when we started to get scared. We picked up the pace. At one point, I looked back and saw him sprinting toward us as he passed under a streetlight. The street was dark. He was running, full speed, right at us. Petrified, we started running like our lives depended on it. It sure felt like they did. We turned at every intersection we could, hoping to lose him. Then we cut through a small park, and so did he. We didn't need to look back to know he was still coming. There was a dead-end street on the other side of the park, with a path at the very end. My friend, who was ahead of me, made a quick turn toward the corner of a house and jumped behind a bush. I followed and crouched beside him. It was the scariest moment of my life. The man came running through the path and stopped in the middle of the street. He just stood there, looking around, searching. Somehow, thankfully, he crossed to the other side of the street to check there instead. To this day, I believe that choice is what kept us alive. We watched as he searched. Then we started backing away, slowly, into the backyard of the house. We jumped a fence. The property backed onto a ravine. We took the forest trail back to the park and ran the rest of the way to my house, kilometers away. We didn't stop once. Story 25. I was in high school when The Grudge came out in theaters, back in 2004. I took my girlfriend to go see it. That movie was terrifying. I love horror movies, but for some reason, both The Grudge and The Ring scared the absolute hell out of me the first time I watched them. Anyway, after the movie, I was driving my girlfriend home. She was still really shaken up, and we were talking about the scariest parts. It was probably around midnight. I was driving on Highway 22 in Louisville, Kentucky. If you've ever been on 22, you know, it's a dark, creepy road with very little lighting and some crazy turns. I came around one of the worst turns on the road, and suddenly, right in front of us, was this huge deer. Just standing in the middle of the road, a big one. My girlfriend screamed bloody murder. And honestly, so did I. I swerved hard, barely missed it, and somehow managed to regain control of the car. I turned to try to calm her down, but when I opened my mouth, no sound came out. I couldn't speak, not a single word. It must have been the adrenaline or something, but for a solid 5 to 10 seconds, I had no voice. It was like my vocal cords had swollen shut. When I did manage to speak, it was just a low, distorted murmur, like a monster. My voice came back slowly after about 30 seconds. Needless to say, the movie already scared her. The deer incident pushed her further, and now her boyfriend couldn't talk and was making monster noises. She was completely over the edge. Eventually, I got my voice back and reassured her. But those couple of minutes, absolutely terrifying. Still the scariest moment I've ever had. Story 26. When I was 8 or 9 years old, my family lived in a house with a large foyer at the front. The ceiling was about 15 to 20 feet high, and from it hung a massive chandelier with multiple bulbs. Some of those bulbs had gone out earlier in the day, so my mom planned to change them later that night. While I was in the shower and my little brother was taking a bath, she thought it would be a good time to fix the lights. She set up the ladder and started working. But the ladder was faulty. It collapsed. She fell hard, landed on her head, broke her arm, and suffered other injuries I don't even fully remember. I came out of my bedroom and saw the collapsed ladder, shattered glass everywhere, and a pool of blood. Then I saw my mom limping down the hallway toward me. It was terrifying. Soon after, fire trucks and an ambulance pulled up. Paramedics and firemen filled our house. They rushed her to the hospital. I spent the night next door with some family friends. It's definitely one of the scariest things I've ever experienced. The image of my injured mom walking toward me and the chaos that followed still sticks with me. Story 27. I went on a family vacation to Mexico 1 year, and my parents planned a little side trip to go snorkeling. We went to this bay where we met up with our snorkel guides. They loaded us onto a boat and took us far out into the ocean. You could still see land, but it was very far away. Complete isolation in the ocean is one of my biggest fears, but there were around 20 people with us, so I sucked it up and jumped in. At first, it was amazing, checking out coral, swimming through schools of fish. I ended up zoning out, just admiring the sea life. I zoned out so much that when I finally lifted my head out of the water, I realized I had drifted far from my family and the group. They were in the distance, all staring at me and pointing downward. I put my face back in the water, and there it was. About 15 feet below me was a massive barracuda. It was eerie. The schools of fish swayed gently with the ocean current, but this thing, this giant, was perfectly still. Completely motionless, just floating there beneath me. I've never swum faster in my life. Later, I learned that barracuda attacks on humans are rare, but at the time, I had no idea. That moment scared the life out of me. Story 28. When I was a young boy, my father was riding home on his motorbike after work, without a helmet. I used to play at the end of the driveway on my big wheel, racing up and down the sidewalk. That day, as my dad rounded the corner at the end of our block, a car swerved out to pass another that had stopped at the stop sign, hitting my dad's bike head on. I remember the noise. The crash, the yelling, the sirens. I remember people shouting and talking all around me as I sat frozen on my big wheel, just staring at my dad bleeding on the road. I remember watching his body convulse as someone tried to roll him over. It all felt like I wasn't even there, like I was watching someone else watch it happen. An ambulance must have been nearby because it arrived almost instantly. Still, it felt like forever that I sat there, staring at that horror. Then Liz, our neighbor, ran over and wrapped her arms around me, pulling me away. My mom later said I didn't move or say a word until Liz touched me. Then I started to scream. The memories come in flashes, like a Picasso painting, surreal, distorted. I used to have nightmares of things erupting from my dad's bleeding head, turning into monsters. He lived, but was partially paralyzed and needed years of therapy to recover. And he changed. I remember a warm man with a big mustache, but after he came home, he was cold, hard, his eyes always looked so sad. Story 29. Two moments. The first, I was 11 years old, riding my bike around town with my buddy Mikey. We lived in a rough area, so seeing gang activity wasn't exactly rare. That day, we passed by two groups screaming at each other. We stopped to watch, curious. Then one of the men pulled a knife from his jacket and started stabbing another guy. Over and over. At least 15 times. The man being stabbed collapsed instantly. Even though we were about 55 feet away, I still remember the sound. The gurgling as he choked on his own blood, I watched him die. We jumped on our bikes and rode home fast. Called the police. They caught the guy. But the second moment, this one stayed with me longer. I was 19, working as a parts driver for Chevy in Northern Virginia. That day, I had a delivery in the D.C. area. I noticed a young woman driving while talking on the phone. No seatbelt. I didn't think much of it until she veered into a lifted Jeep next to her and lost control. Her car flipped. Because she wasn't wearing a seatbelt, she was thrown forward, face first into the windshield. Her face and left shoulder went through it. Somehow, she got stuck in the wreckage and was dragged by the car. I was the first one there. Half of her face was gone. You could see beyond her jawbone. Her shoulder was completely destroyed. Blood was everywhere. She was trying to crawl out, but she was pinned. I was 3 feet away, watching this woman dig into the pavement, trying to escape. And then, as she gave one final push, her strength failed. Her arms collapsed. Her head dropped to the concrete. I watched her die, right in front of me. Story 30. There was a building in town that had a reputation of being haunted by some girl who was raped and killed in the early 1900s. Story goes that if you come close enough, you can hear crying coming from the building's tower, and you would be overwhelmed by a feeling of helplessness and sadness. So one night, a friend of mine and I went to get a quick scare and a bit of adventure. It was senior year of high school, and there wasn't much else to do. At first, it wasn't much. Graffiti-covered walls, a blocked-off stairwell that led to the tower, and the terrible smell of rat sheesh. We were heading out, disappointed that we didn't feel anything strange, when suddenly I saw my buddy start to run. Now, I'm not one to get scared easily, but when I looked up at the tower, I nearly lost it. I saw what could best be described as a bald, albino gargoyle-looking thing with glowing red eyes, and it was staring directly at me. As I stood there frozen, the thing opened its mouth and let out the most blood-curdling scream I have ever heard. I didn't think. I just ran. I chased after my friend and we drove away as fast as possible. It was nothing like what I expected, and even though it's been nearly 5 years, I can still picture the look that thing gave me. Story 31. One time as a kid, I was sleeping over at my cousin's place. He was maybe 11 and I would have been 12 or 13. During the night, he suddenly woke me up screaming, making a panicked cry that sounded really terrified. I looked down from the top bunk to see him half out of the bed, on his back on the floor, just staring at the window. And when I looked too, I saw a black shape drop down and disappear from view. After glimpsing that for only a millisecond, I jumped down to join him, and we both bolted from the room to get his mom. The next day, we tried to figure out how someone could have possibly reached the second story window, and we realized that if you really tried, you could step on the patio railing, then climb onto the small patio light just below the window, and from there get a view into the bedroom. Some creep had clearly climbed the side of my cousin's house just to watch him sleep. But the story he told me is what truly terrified me. He said he turned over and saw the top half of a man at the window. He sat up, and after a few seconds, he said he could clearly make out the whites of the guy's eyes staring directly at him. The man just stayed there, unmoving, even after he started screaming. From what it sounds like, he only left when he noticed a second person in the room. Story 32. Okay, so something happened to me that I will never forget. It was a nice summer day, and I was about 8 or 9 years old. It was early in the morning, and I decided to go hang out with my two friends who were brothers and about the same age as me. So I walked over to their house. We did normal kid stuff like playing video games or something until their dad came in and asked us if we wanted to go to this toy store that wasn't too far from their place. Maybe like a mile away at most. Just a couple of little streets and one sort of major street. We said yes, of course, and since it was such a nice day, we decided to walk there. We got there with no problem, and my friend's dad said we could each pick out one thing, and he'd buy it for us. And to this day, I still remember the toy I chose. It was this little plastic box filled with rubber animals like snakes and lions. So we left the store, which was right on the corner of the intersection, and we were waiting at the light for the walk signal. When it lit up, we all held hands for some reason, maybe because we were young, and started crossing the street. We were maybe 5 steps in when this sedan came speeding around the corner and slammed into us. Me, my 2 friends, and their dad. It all happened so fast, and the next thing I knew, I was on the ground in the middle of the street. In a total state of shock, I stood up, everything around me silent and moving in slow motion, like that scene from Saving Private Ryan. I looked around, completely confused, and saw my friend's dad lying on his back in the street. One of the boys was on the grass past the sidewalk, and the other was halfway on the curb and halfway in the road. I ran up to their dad, who was still conscious, and he barely managed to get out the words, "Get my wife." After hearing that, I just started running toward their house, bleeding from my elbow and crying, completely overwhelmed. The panic set in hard, and I actually forgot how to get there, which made everything worse, but luckily I ran into a kid I knew who was riding his bike, and he asked me, "Were you just in that car accident down there?" And I just screamed at the top of my lungs, "How do I get to Louis's house?" And he led me there. I still remember the look on my friend's mom's face when I barged into their house, crying and bloody, and shouted, "We got hit by a car." She grabbed her keys and took off in her car immediately. I was injured the least, just a cut-up elbow. One of the brothers had broken his leg after being tossed into the grass, and the other had his hand run over when he got knocked down, while their dad rolled up the car's hood and smashed into the windshield before hitting the pavement. We all went to the hospital, and thankfully, we were all eventually okay. The woman who hit us had run a red light, but she did stop, and we ended up suing her, so at least there was that.
Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5 quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.
But to this day, I still remember going back to that spot after my parents picked me up and seeing all those little rubber snakes and lions scattered all across the street. Story 33. I was visiting my sister in Oklahoma one summer, and I had told her about me and my girlfriend at the time seeing her dead grandma in their old house. She decided we should go ghost hunting somewhere in Oklahoma and took me about an hour away to this old tuberculosis hospital. Apparently, there was no cure back in the mid-1900s, so everyone ended up dying at that hospital. We got there around 9 p.m. and were just walking around, taking pictures and such, when we wandered to the back where there was a courtyard and a door leading inside. While standing there talking, we suddenly started to hear a bouncing noise, which instantly made us go quiet. We could hear little kids laughing and giggling and a ball being bounced down the hall, coming closer and closer to us. We heard it roll all the way to the door, and suddenly the kids stopped laughing and running, like they just realized we were standing there. I have never run so fast in my life. My body moved on its own, like I had no control over it. I still get chills down my neck every time I think about it. Story 34. I live on the Gulf Coast of Florida, and when I was about 17, me and 2 friends were out on my family's wave runner, about 200 yards offshore. This was a 4-seat monster of a wave runner, at least 12 feet long. There had been reports of an unusual number of bull sharks in the area, big ones. The reason we were just hanging out where we were is because that part of the water is absolutely beautiful, a light emerald color, and the temperature was perfect since it was summer. We would take turns jumping off and swimming around for a few minutes, and there was also a pod of dolphins playing about 20 yards away from us, so we were swimming around them and just enjoying the moment. When it was my turn to take a swim, I walked to the back of the wave runner and took my life jacket off. Just as I was about to jump, my friend screamed and grabbed my wrist. A huge bull shark was swimming directly toward us, maybe 10 feet off to the left, and I would have pretty much jumped right on top of it, if not into its mouth. The reason I mentioned the size of the wave runner is because, as the shark swam under us, It was not only longer than the entire vessel, but just as wide. We just sat there in complete shock, too scared to even move. Story 35. I was about 16 when it happened. I opened up a tent flap after hearing some kids yelling something about fire, thinking maybe they were just goofing off, flicking matches or something, and managed to get a canvas tent smoldering. But when I looked over my shoulder about 15 feet away, I saw a giant column of flame, at least 30 feet high, spewing from a busted propane tank. What I remember most vividly is the black silhouette of some brave, stupid kid trying to throw a bucket of water on it. I sprinted from my tent, fully convinced with every step that the damn thing was going to explode, screaming for everyone to get away. After clearing the area, I ran to grab fire extinguishers up the road with other staff members, and together we managed to put out the fire. Only then did I realize I had never put anything on my feet when I left the tent, and they were cut up badly from running through the woods and over gravel roads. I hadn't felt a thing until I looked down, and then suddenly it hurt so much I couldn't walk anymore. Still, nothing I've ever experienced compares to the moment I saw a 12-year-old standing against a giant wall of fire and was absolutely sure he was going to die. Story 36. I'm an avid outdoor backpacker, and one night I went out with a friend who was new to backpacking for what I thought would be a quick, easy, and fun overnight trip. Everything started off great. Campfire, sausage, peace and quiet. We went to sleep in a wooden shelter we had stumbled upon during a previous day hike. This shelter wasn't on any maps, and we were pretty deep in the woods, about an hour hike from where we parked, and then another hour drive back home in southwest Sweden. Around 3 a.m., my friend woke me up saying he wasn't feeling well and begged me to take him home. I was annoyed having just fallen asleep, but I agreed. What are friends for? So we started making our way back along a remote lumber trail, surrounded by only a few scattered farms kilometers away from where we had camped. After a bit, he said he needed to stop and rest because he had a fever. He sat down and we just talked. But then I heard something moving in the bushes about 10 meters away. I told him to shut up and we went quiet. I figured it was a bird. He started talking again, and again I heard it. This time, it was unmistakably footsteps coming toward us, now just 5 meters away. That's when I got spooked.